The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn.
The moment we have been waiting for. Very, very special day to be here at the St. Louis Fed with Jim Bullard. He is president of the bank. I had the privilege of being your first interview when you became president.
I remember it well.
I do too. I do too. And I'll never forget, and Vonnie, you're going to get a kick out of this, and listeners. Jim said, well, I don't know why you want to talk to someone like me. I think he's learned over these past few years that it's the position you took is a very important one, and you have certainly left your imprint. You're making a difference here at the Fed and Monetary Policy, Jim.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks for being here for the Homer Jones lecture, which we're looking forward to this afternoon.
We had a great talk with Mohammed Al-Aryan, and he's delivering the lecture, and we've been telling everybody they can watch it stream live, 5 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Central, on the St. Louis website. We just got the beige book. Let's get right down to it, because hearing Vonnie's report and looking at the headlines that we pulled out from our Bloomberg reporting, there's a lot of positive elements in that beige book.
Yeah, I think it talks in, of course, it's anecdotal, but it talks in terms of generally positive growth in the U.S. economy, and I think is broadly consistent with data that has come out over the last 5 or 6 months for the U.S.
Well, I think a big question mark since Friday, of course, is what's going on in the labor market, because the markets were geared up for something over 200,000 in payrolls. The number came in at 120,000. Did it change your view of the economy at all?
That was a little bit weaker than markets were expecting, but I wouldn't go too far with just one number. You have to put that in the context of generally improving conditions in labor markets. And a lot of the past data, the last 5 or 6 months, has ultimately been revised up. So we'll have to see if that's what happens with this particular report. But it was down a little bit, but it's kind of a mediocre number, I would say.
Any chance the economy is stalling out again, like it did last year?
Well, we'll keep an eye on it, and we'll keep tracking the economy, and we'll see what's going on. But I think for right now, I'd stick with the idea that the economy will generally be better in 2012 than it was in 2011.
And what kind of growth are you looking for in GDP?
I think 3% for this year is still a reasonable guess. I was a little more optimistic than maybe some of the other forecasters earlier in the year, but I think the data has borne out a little stronger forecast for 2012 than some people had early in the year.
Where do you see unemployment at the end of the year?
I think we'll be below 8%. We'll be down at 7.8% by the end of the year. We're actually in the process of revisiting our forecast because the April FOMC meeting we'll have to turn in new forecasts. So we haven't done it yet, and we won't do it till we get all the data that we possibly can before we turn that in. But I wouldn't expect a lot of changes to the forecast because I was already somewhat more optimistic than others. But yeah, I think 7.8% on unemployment is reasonable. I think unemployment will continue to tick down this year as long as the expansion keeps going. And that seems to have been borne out, so far. Right now we're at 8.2%.
So what are the top economic variables you're watching their performance, and what view of the economy do they point to? We've mentioned unemployment, payrolls. Are there any other big ones for you?
Well, we try to look at the whole picture and make an assessment as best we can. Some are hard data like labor market data, but I think also softer factors that are harder to get your head around, like what's going to happen in Europe. That's something markets, of course, have been wrestling with for quite a while now. And Asia, China, what's going to happen there? I think that's another one to try to factor in. So there's many dimensions to trying to get an assessment of the economy.
You said in a recent speech that past behavior of the committee regarding adding more stimulus, like the long-term bond purchases, when you look at the behavior and how it has played out, that it would indicate that rather than getting more quantitative easing, the FOMC is going to adopt a wait-and-see strategy. Is that as far as you go on that? Just is it wait and see, or are you getting more to the point where it's coming closer to we really don't need any more quantitative easing?
Well, I think so far in 2012, the economy has surprised on the upside, and usually when that happens, the committee will. I mean, I'm just one person on the committee, but usually when that happens, the committee will sort of want to get confirmation of that by waiting for more data. And so I think that's the situation that we're in the current environment. So I think that that's a, you know, it's a good behavior of the committee. I'm not sure I'd push it that hard right now to say, we have to go into tightening mode. I think the first thing that you do is you go into pause mode, you get more data, you see how the economy is evolving, you get confirmation to see if signs of strength are continuing, and then at some point later down the line, you can make a decision about where to go next.
Well, one decision you're going to have to make, first of all, you point out that very important, April 25th, these revised, the next forecasts from all the FOMC members, but Operation Twist is expiring in June. So that's, I think, a pretty important question. What would your decision be at this point? What do you think? That don't extend it? I mean,
yeah, I think people have, the markets have this Twist thing wrong. So they've got the idea that Twist is going to expire. And so they're talking a lot about, well, what's going to replace Twist? But the committee has already done something else. And the something else has been to put in the calendar date of the first tightening. And at the January meeting, we moved that calendar date out to late 2014. So for a lot of people, that would be considered an easier policy than what was in place earlier. And that isn't expiring at the end of June. So I think that the committee has made some moves to ameliorate those fears that some have had about the end of a Twist program or the end of a QE program that we've had. So I think markets have this a little bit wrong, that the notion that the Twist is going to end, and that's sort of like the end of QE2 or the end of QE1.
Well, but buying bonds and the latest QE bought up pretty much all the new issuance. And we could.
It was Twist, so you bought some and you sold some others.
Well, that's true. Yeah. You're right. But okay, fair enough. So I guess you're saying that what do you think has been the primary driver of bond yields the last few months? What impact has Twist had? What impact has the European debt crisis had? Or, I think some people put a lot of weight on the bond purchases.
Well, I think it's only had a modest impact. So when it ends, I think it will only have a modest impact. The primary driver of U.S. Treasury yields was the recession scare that got started in early August of last year. That recession scare has lifted some, but yields have stayed at the low levels that they were associated with at that time. But if you look at the data, they moved down tremendously right around that time period. And a lot of that had to do with, increased fears of a meltdown in Europe. Some of that's retraced. But above all, worse economic data, the GDP data was all revised way down in the middle of last summer. And that really made a lot of people worry about recession in the U.S.
I was just asking you about this idea that there's a Bernanke put. People talked about the Greenspan put. It's the idea that, as again, we've got the bad GDP report late July, markets sold off, the Fed announced more quantitative easing September 21st, stock market bottomed, and people are now convinced that it's liquidity and the promise of liquidity that has helped drive stocks higher, and that's why the Fed can't back away from it. Because if stocks fall again, they got to do it again, and that's the put.
No, I don't think that there is a put. And what I think happens is that the Fed and the Open Market Committee and the chairman look at the same data that the stock market looks at. So it looks like they're sort of making moves in tandem, but that isn't really what's going on. The Fed is concerned about the performance of the economy, concerned about the medium and long-term inflation outlook, which is the only thing we can control over the longer term. And so it's not just that, gosh, every time stocks go down, the committee's going to do something. I think it's all about real economic performance and inflation.
So you're saying if the economy stays as it is now, let's say it's growing somewhere around 2.5% GDP, jobs are a little bit spotty here and there. We get over 200,000, maybe a number like we got on Friday, enough economic performance for the Fed to stay in its wait-and-see mode, as you said you think the Fed is now, even if stocks have a sharp sell-off?
Well, if there was a sharp stock sell-off, then you'd have to ask yourself, well, what are they looking at, and what is it that they're worried about? And it's possible that there'd be things that would happen in the world that would trigger that sell-off. So I think you really can't look at it just in the context of Fed policy and whatever the stock market's doing. You have to say, what's driving both of those performers when you look around the world and you look at the economy as a whole?
You know, you mentioned the other tool of monetary policy right now, or one of the others, which is the pledge to keep the key rate at near zero till late 2014, assuming the economy warrants it. In January, you were in the camp that said late 2013, seeing a tightening as most likely by the end of the next year. Where are you now?
Well, again, we're redoing our forecast now, we haven't completed that process yet, so I don't want to prejudge it too much. But I wouldn't, you know, normally the forecast doesn't change that much when you do a revision, and so I'm probably going to be right in the same neighborhood as I came up before, which was late 2013. So that's a little bit somewhat earlier than the committee, than the median in the committee, but. You know, I think that the most important lesson about that 2014 date is the extreme amount of uncertainty around that date. Because if you look at where the members are, you know, some are, you know, you have to measure the amount of uncertainty in years. So some are in different, you know, all these different people are in different years. And so that just shows you, how uncertain the economic outlook is, and how little we, you know, really know when we look that far out into the future about what the U.S. economic performance will really be.
If the economy improves faster than expected, does the Fed risk losing credibility with the 2014 conditional pledge?
I think that's a risk for the committee that I have been, you know, kind of talking down the putting these dates in there, because I think they're confusing. I do think when you try to say something about what the economy is going to be like 3 years in the future, and the implicit message is that we don't really have any idea what the economy is going to be like, but we think it's going to be bad. And so I think that sends a very negative signal, a very pessimistic signal about what the U.S. economy's what the economic performance is going to be. And I think that can be actually counterproductive, because the truth is we don't know any better than anyone else what economic performance is going to look like 3 years from now. So the amount of information we really have about what the situation is going to look like at that juncture is very limited. And the chairman has said as much, but I think that sort of the uncertainty aspect often gets lost in the discussion, and people take it as something else. But to get back to the question, will that date shift around as we get closer to 2014? I think it will, because the outlook will change. It's unlikely that the outlook would stay exactly the way it is today, all the time up until 2014.
And in fact, at the last minutes show, that at the last meeting, there were several participants who thought it might be helpful to look at alternative economic scenarios and monetary responses appropriate under each one. And it seems like an interesting comment that maybe more needs to be done on this communications policy, another one of the Fed's tools now. What is behind it?
Well, I think there's been an interest among members, and a lot of people have talked about it, that we'd like to be able to convey more information about how we're going to behave going forward in all these possible states of the world. And so these alternative scenarios would be a way to write down possible future states of the world, and then you could talk about you know, how you might react in that situation. Now, I think historically, this has not been viewed as a very productive thing to do, because there's so many possible things that could happen that you can't write down the whole map of possible things, and you can't say how you'd react in every state of the world. But I guess in recent years, it's become maybe more fashionable to start talking more about how the committee might behave in different scenarios.
Well, specifically with this pledge to keep it low till late 2014, and this, you know, signal it sends on the economy, is there some fear that if the FOMC removed the 2014 pledge too soon, it would damage credibility and roil the market? So that would, you know, maybe that produces a reluctance to revise it for fear you're going to upset the markets.
Well, just speaking for myself, I mean, I wouldn't be reluctant to revise it, because in my view, this is just a statement about what the most likely outcome is, given that the information that we have right now. But as I'm emphasizing to you, there's tremendous uncertainty about that. And clearly, as we get closer to the actual date, we're going to have to move it around, because the economic situation will have changed.
This is a very special day, not only for Bloomberg Radio, because we're interviewing Jim Bullard and five of the bank's economists and Mohammed Al-Aryan of PIMCO, but also because it's the Homer Jones Memorial Lecture.
That's right. Homer Jones was a former research director here at the bank. He's often described as Milton Friedman's teacher, and had a big influence on the bank and the research department here and the ideas of the St. Louis Fed.
Yeah, and Mohammed's in the company because he's giving the lecture. Ben Bernanke and Axel Weber and all kinds of really, really outstanding economists.
That's right. We've had a long tradition. This is 23 years, I think, we've been doing this.
Yeah. Well, it's just a great day to be here. It's a fun day. I get to go to the lecture later and a reception. Wonderful. But let's get some more out of you, Jim Bullard. You're a gracious host, but I'm going to take advantage.
Okay.
Speaking of the output gap, because there's one of the other debates in the markets, certainly at the Fed among economists, is inflation. That on the one hand, why worry about inflation? Unemployment is high. Consumers are deleveraging. You know, Europe is slowing down. China's not growing as fast. It, you know, if the Fed needs to do more, inflation is not a worry. It doesn't stand in the way. And this output gap notion, a lot of unused resources, high unemployment. You don't quite see it that way. Why?
Well, I mean, you know, people say inflation's not a problem. I mean, inflation is low right now, but it is above our inflation target when measured from 1 year ago by either headline CPI inflation or headline PCE inflation. It has been moderating, but I think the main thing is that we're taking a lot of risk, a lot of inflation risk, by having a very large balance sheet, by having interest rates at zero for a long time, and we have a promise out there to keep them at zero. So what, you know, the conventional wisdom in central banking is that if you let the inflation genie out of the bottle, it's very, very hard to get it back in. That was the lesson of the 1970s. Sometimes people say, well, you can just raise interest rates when that happens. But if you look at the 1970s, interest rates did go up. The policy rate did go up, but it didn't go up fast enough to contain an explosive inflationary situation. And it really roiled global markets for more than a decade before inflation finally got under control. And the surprise of the 1970s was that inflation was high and variable, but the real economy in the U.S. was also highly variable. So we had four recessions in 13 years, and we had ever-rising unemployment through that decade. So it's just was such a disaster that you don't want to be messing around with that in the current situation. I mean, monetary policy has been appropriately easy, ultra easy. But the question is, you know, we don't want to overstay our welcome on this ultra easy policy. And I am worried about committing to the ultra easy policy over the next couple of years. And then that's exactly the time when you'd expect the economy to come around and turn in a better performance. And we'd like to be able to have the option of taking a lot of this liquidity off the table when that time comes.
Well, how do you know you're at that point? I mean, at what point will the Fed start to worry about inflation rising in addition to worrying that unemployment is too high? How much above that 2% threshold on the PCE deflator do you have to rise to shift the Fed's focus?
I think unemployment will continue to tick down this year as it has. And if you look at the 1990s and the 2000s, as long as the economy's in expansion, so as long as the economy's growing, unemployment tends to continue to tick down. And I think that's what'll happen this time as well. So I don't think it's really a matter that you need really rapid growth. I think that you can get by with more moderate growth, which is what we have right now. But I think the labor market tends to settle down. Households tend to evaluate the wages that are out there, the skills that they have, and they go ahead and take those jobs that are available. So the unemployment rate does continue to tick down as long as you have, long as you're in an expansionary mode. So that's what I would expect, and I don't think we can really speed that up very much by, committing to stay at zero for a long time.
So then, monetary policy isn't the right tool to fix unemployment rate.
Yeah, I think the way you should think about this is that labor market policies that directly intervene in the labor market are more likely to be successful. So if you want to help unemployed people and unemployed households, and we have many unemployed people in the U.S. right now, thinking of policies that would directly affect them is more effective than using the very blunt instrument of monetary policy, because when you change interest rates in the economy, you're affecting everybody's decisions all throughout the economy and to some extent throughout the world. And so you're distorting lots of decision making everywhere instead of just focusing on the people that really need the help, which are the people that are out of work. So I think if we could get a little bit of mindset that would go in that direction, take a little bit of the pressure off of monetary policy, and think about other kinds of programs that we could put in place that would speed up the adjustment process, we might get better outcomes.
What about oil prices? We haven't touched on that at all. Higher gasoline prices. Are you in the camp that says we're more immune, the economy's more immune, more energy efficient, and it's not an issue? Or is it something that could either, one, start adding to inflationary pressures, or two, add to deflationary pressures because it cuts disposable income and hurts consumers?
I do think the U.S. economy is more energy efficient than people realize, because the number of BTUs per unit of GDP has steadily gone down over time, at least according to the data I've seen. And I think that is the right way to look at energy efficiency. So I do think that the U.S. economy is less vulnerable to oil shocks than it was in the 1970s, when the BTUs per unit of GDP were much higher, twice as high or more. So that goes in our favor. I do worry about that some of the inflation comes through commodity prices, that when you have a situation in the Middle East like we have now with Iran, that's a wild card, if the Fed takes action, let's say an easing action, that you could feed into a kind of a process that's already going on coming from the wild card factor, and that you could get a sharp move up in commodity prices. So I do worry about that as a risk. Today it doesn't seem like that's happening, but you never know.
How do you see the risks from Western Europe and EMU now?
I think that the LTRO of the ECB has been a successful program. I think that the initial impact of that is probably wearing off at this point, and markets are probably coming to the realization that governments definitely have a lot of work to do, and all that the LTRO can really do is buy time for governments to make the fiscal consolidation that has to be made. And those decisions don't get any easier going forward, and especially because the some of the countries are in a sharp recession, and that makes their fiscal situations all that much worse. So there's no getting around it. These countries have borrowed too much. They have to adopt austerity programs. They don't really have an option to borrow more. That isn't really on the table. They're at the end of their rope as far as borrowing. So the only option is austerity and getting their fiscal situation in order. If they do get their fiscal situation in order, that will pay handsome dividends for those economies, but that'll take a while, and so that's where we are.
Okay, Friday's a big day.
Yeah.
Go Cardinals.
Yeah, opening day. Cardinals have done very well so far, so we're looking forward to a great year.
Okay, well, hope so. We'll be rooting for your team, Jim. Thanks so much. Jim Buller, President of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. Thanks so much.
You can listen to the Hayes Advantage weekdays at noon Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012, Bloomberg LP.